Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So, this week has been somewhat busy in some ways.
Indeed.
Yes. So, let's start from the top. In the beginning of the week, your sister came to visit. Your
yes.
sister is and is still visiting here now.
She is here as we speak.
Yeah, so Teresa has come up from Dallas, and this is our first out-of-town family, you know, Scott family visitor since the fall of 2019.
Yes, thank you, COVID.
right. And so she's vaccinated. She was happy to travel. She's here partly at this particular point, and to be here partly for Lucy's first communion, which is nice.
She has not missed one of the kids' first communions.
So. Right. For those who haven't been with us for a long time, Teresa used to live with us. When we first moved into this house a dozen, almost
12 years ago,
12 and a half years ago now, she moved up from Texas to move in with us and lived with us for 4 years? 2011, I think. She was here when Anthony was born, right?
Yeah, it was. She left in 2012.
All right, so about 4 years, and then she moved back to Texas. So, she was here for the birth of the four of them, and then she's flown up as each of the kids, you know, have been by. She comes up once a year generally, and she's been here for first communions for all the kids. So, and this is our last first communion.
It is.
We were just thinking about that today. It's kind of weird.
Our last first communion.
And then we will be moving on to confirmations next year.
Yes. Next year, Isabella will be confirmed. And then 2 years after that, Sophia. And then a year after that, Ben. And
yes.
So, yeah, we're
moving right along. Yeah. And then a year after that is Anthony, I think. I think he's immediately a year after.
No, he's 2 years after Ben.
Okay. Yes. And then Lucy's 2 years after him.
Right.
Wow. Unless they change the order of the, you know, restored order of confirmation, and then we can do them all at once.
You know, there's something kind of attractive about that. I've had friends who have done that, and it's...
Right, their diocese switched to, you know, having them receive First Communion, confirmation before First Communion, right?
Or at
the same time. And so all the kids who were skipping all got boom all at once.
Right.
We have a friend who has 9 kids, and like 4 kids all at once got confirmed.
Four confirmations at one ceremony. That's kind of cool, actually.
That is kind of cool. Get it done with.
Yeah. Theologically speaking, I'm in favor of the restored order.
I am too. And practically speaking.
Yes.
There's a lot of, as someone who's worked in youth ministry and faith formation, and worked in parishes in general, there's a lot of cruft that has been added on to confirmation preparation.
Yes.
We have opinions on that, as we do.
I have
a lot
strong
of
opinions.
Yes.
I'll try not to be too strongly opinionated.
Confirmation is supposed to be a reception of the Holy Spirit, you know,
a gift,
not a, you have to earn it by doing service hours and stuff like that. So, yeah. By moving it to younger, there's fewer expectations placed on kids. You're not going to expect the same amount of stuff out of a 8-year-old as you do out of a 15-year-old.
Right. Because it's not about what you do. It's about what God does.
Right. Yeah, there's plenty of good arguments for the restored order. And most of the arguments for not switching are logistics or because it's the way we've always done it sort of thing.
Right.
Which are never convincing to me.
No.
Anyway, so Teresa's come to visit. She'll be here through Memorial Day, you know, so after Lucy's first communion is Memorial Day weekend. So that'll be nice. She'll get to go to my niece's graduation party, high school graduation party, and get to see my family, which would be nice.
Yeah.
So, and then the day after Teresa came, Isabella's birthday. We'd mentioned that before.
Yeah, Isabella is now 15.
Wow. I was just thinking, like, just I said to you yesterday, what didn't I, like, we're going to have to start thinking about colleges in 2 years.
Yep.
No, I'm not ready for that.
Yeah, I realized, in fact, this weekend that I needed to start looking at her planning out her sophomore year, like buying books and planning out her schedules and everything for that. So, yeah, signing up for chemistry.
I to me, it's the thought of doing like the financial aid forms and SATs. And
see, whereas I'm freaking out about like having to write a transcript.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And essays, application essays.
Yeah, we should probably have her do like a practice SAT and that sort of thing too.
I'm like 30 years removed from like writing a college application. I don't remember, like everything is different now. Everything's online. There was no online when I did this.
Right, yeah.
You know, being an older parent is... It's interesting anyway, but her birthday. So, what did she get? She got a Lego set. She wanted a Lego set. I picked out the good one, right?
Yes. She was very thrilled with the Lego set that you picked out.
It was the Star Wars, of course. It was the, from the first episode of the second season of The Mandalorian, the Tatooine set. They were mostly overjoyed because it had a Lego minifig of Grogu, Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
So yeah, good choice for
very,
me.
Very, very important.
Yeah, so she got some shirts, Star Wars shirts.
Yep, two Ahsoka Tano Star Wars shirts.
Really good ones. I like them.
And she got a... the Star Wars Black series is the really, really nice...
figures. Action figures.
Action figures. So she got a Hera Syndulla.
Yeah, that's one of the characters from Star Wars Rebels.
And some books and...
yeah.
Stuff.
A few things like that, yeah. And then... For the birthday dinner celebration, we're still not able to go to a restaurant of their choice. What was her first choice?
She wanted seafood.
Oh, right. She wanted some place that had popcorn shrimp or to order from a place. I could not for the life of me find some place. Like, there was one place local that I totally would order from, but they're not open on Mondays and Tuesdays. So I asked her if she could, look, if you choose something else, we'll all go to Jake's Seafood in a month or a few weeks when all the lockdown orders are ended and we can actually all go out to a meal together in a restaurant. So she agreed and switched to pho, Vietnamese pho, which...
It was good.
That was a good choice. We have there's a really nice new pho place that delivers to us. It's not cheap. DoorDash, let me just give you my little rant about... I think I might have ranted about DoorDash before. Mm-hmm. It is a ripoff. It is a ripoff for the restaurants. It's a ripoff for the... I mean, I get it. They're providing a service. But, oh my gosh, it's like an extra, like, $35. I should have just gotten the car and driven over to the place.
Right.
It's just, it's crazy how much extra it is. I don't know that I can justify doing DoorDash, except for places that I can't drive to. Anyway, so that's... So then, after we had dinner, we had her cake, right?
Yeah, I made her a lemon layer cake with lemon frosting.
Oh my gosh, so good. And I only got one piece. In one hand, I was being good. I totally could have like snuck more cake at a later date.
Uh-huh.
But I was being good. But Bella was saying it's the best cake she ever had.
That was high praise.
Yes, it was really good. The frosting, the cake, it was...
So I made... I found one that was supposed to be like a very fluffy cake. I did substitute in some almond flour, which I think adds like extra
always
moisture.
Adds richness. Yeah.
But I sifted the flour to make it really light and fluffy. And the frosting was a cream cheese buttercream, so like a stick of butter plus a block of cream cheese and lots of lemon juice and some. I boosted the lemon flavor with some lemon extract in addition to the lemon juice. And I think that just kind of knocked it up to like super lemon.
Yeah, it was a lemon cake should be super lemony. I feel like a lot of lemon cakes out there, they don't want to overwhelm you with lemon. And so they kind of No, it should be super. A lemon cake should be super.
Yeah, this lemon cake, the cake itself had lots of lemon zest. I like doubled or tripled the amount of lemon zest, plus lemon juice, plus I added some lemon extract, which the recipe didn't call for.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah.
So then we went to Scouts. They had a scout meeting, and so the scouts had a party for Bella. They had a cake, and they gave her some gifts. They gave her like binoculars and some things like that. It was really nice. That was nice of them to do that. She's the senior patrol leader. She's the patrol leader. There's one patrol. There's only five girls. So they kind of did something nice for her in that case.
The binoculars were especially nice because she's so into birding.
Yeah, and that's why they got it for her, because the scoutmaster knows that she's the bird expert in the troop. In fact, he's thinking of doing a birding merit badge just so, because Bella would be able to help all the girls with it because she knows so much about the birds. So that's cool. So today, as Sunday, as we record, was a really hot day. It was the first 90 degree day in Boston this year. Although we had a nice cold front blow through, and it is awesome outside right now. This is what I love New England is the you can go from a really hot, beautiful, but really hot day to a mild evening, just perfect for sitting outside. It's so awesome. Anyway, the troop had a canoeing. So they're planning a canoe camping trip this summer, and they want to get all the scouts familiar with canoes, especially because there's so many new scouts. And so we went over to a local pond lake, and one of the assistant scoutmaster brought a bunch of canoes, and they went out there. So it was the both troops. It was Ben's troop and the girls' troop. And they got out there. So the problem is, technically, none of them have passed the scout swimming test. They're not up to the correct proficiency. So Sophie might have passed it, but she couldn't take the test when they were doing the testing. So none of them could be in the canoes without an adult. So we had to split them up. And so the two of them, Sophie went, I think, with Adam in one canoe. And then Ben and Sophie went with first Dan and then Grandpa Chicken. That's what they call him. I'm not even sure what his first name is. I think it might be Joe, but it's this crazy old coot. I say that affectionately, that they call Grandpa Chicken. And he went with them later, and they got a chance to canoe around and get used to it, and they all got a turn. And so I think once they get out on the canoeing trip, it'll be okay. I'm a little nervous about them being on the canoeing trip.
Okay.
I'm nervous about them flipping the canoe and dumping everything and all that sort of stuff, but we'll see. That we did that today. Oh, and then yesterday was the service day. I forgot all about that.
Right. They did a trail cleanup.
Yeah. There's a school, a private school for autistic kids, right? Profoundly autistic.
Right.
It's a Higashi school, it's called. And the scoutmaster works there, and he arranged to have the troops, both troops, come and do a trail cleanup. They have trails behind it. And they reported back to me that Sophie is a beast when it comes to, like, work. She is, like, they're all hard workers, but everyone was impressed. Like, she would dive into the mass of tangled weeds and vines and branches and, like, stuff that nobody else could pull, she would rip it out of there. And like, she's like,
yeah,
she's like, I was getting my anger out. So
yes,
that was good. They were all impressed with Sophie's work ethic and joie de vivre. No,
something.
Yeah. Something about being angry and pulling things apart. That girl could be a Sith Lord. I'm telling you, Sith Lady.
Or a pirate queen.
Or a pirate queen is the one I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So one other thing I wanted to mention about doing stuff this week. So on Friday, my dad lives with my brother Bernie, but he was going to spend a week with my sister who lives on the other side of Boston. My brother lives in the next town over from us, but my sister lives north of Boston in the town of Peabody, and not Peabody, Peabody. And he needed a ride up there. My brother Bernie couldn't give him a ride. And so he needed a ride, so I volunteered. So I drove him up, and we were going to meet my sister like partway up, and she'd pick him up, so I wouldn't have to drive the entire way, because driving from one side of Boston to the other is like driving to the moon and back. It is, with traffic especially.
Seriously.
Yeah. Although, I mean, the traffic this time, I was expecting to be really bad, like a Friday near or during summer is usually like an afternoon rush hour traffic is like insane usually. It was actually pretty good. We left. Well,
a lot of people are still working remotely who would normally be working in Boston.
I know. I mean, but I've been seeing like traffic is getting back to normal. And when I was looking at the traffic throughout the afternoon on Google Maps, it was bad. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it must be just not as bad. It, you know, it clears out earlier. So I was very happy with that. So as we're driving up and talking to my dad, and I was telling him, I've told this before, how my dad knew a bunch of mobsters in Boston. He was friends with some of them. He definitely did some work, like, you know, odd jobs, running errands, sorts of stuff from some mob guys at some point. I don't know the details completely, but he knew people. So as we're driving up there, I was telling him about watching the Gardner Museum documentary on Netflix. So I talked about it a few weeks ago.
Right.
And I said to him, hey, you know, you talk about your friend Frankie, who did he work for? What family was he in? And my dad, oh, you know, he was in the Angelos. I mean, everyone's in the Angelos. I'm like, oh, okay. And what did he do? Because I never knew. And he's like, oh, he, you know, he oversaw one of their bars in the combat zone. And then we told me a couple stories about, like, him throwing guys out of the bar and stuff like that. And so I was talking about like the Gardner Museum heist and how they thought mobsters were behind it because they mobsters viewed having precious artworks as a get out of jail free card, et cetera, et cetera. And my dad says, oh, yeah, I heard about that before it happened. I'm like, you heard about the heist was going to go down before it happened? Oh, yeah. And then he kind of realized he might have said too much. I'm like, Dad, okay, A, the statute of limitations has expired. B, there's a $5 million reward. If you know something, we need to talk about it. And he kind of wouldn't say anything else and just kind of change the subject. I think my dad knows something about the Gardner Museum heist.
Maybe.
It's a lot. I'm stretching. I mean, my dad, he's full of stories and tales and stuff.
He's a raconteur.
Yeah. And it might have just been like even in the documentary they talked about, everybody was talking beforehand that the Gardner Museum was an easy hit because the security was so lax, et cetera, et cetera. And that might have been what he was saying, but it might not have been. So I'm gonna try to work my dad. I mean, he's 88, so we gotta deal with this. If he knows something, he needs to fess up soon. So I'm just saying. Anyway, that was an interesting ride.
So combat zone.
So the combat zone. Oh yeah, that's
what does
Boston,
that mean?
That's a Boston term. So it was an area of Boston where it was the seedy part of town.
Okay.
That's where the cabarets and the dive bars and the strip clubs and massage parlors and all that sort of stuff was
combat zone. Huh?
They called it the combat zone. So it's gone now. It's pretty much all gone. They really made a concerted effort in the 80s and 90s to clear it out. But I remember like I had to walk through it on my way from the South Station to the Park Street T when I was going to BU, I would walk. If I didn't want to wait for the train because the trains took forever,
right?
I would walk from Park Street to South Station, and it went through the combat zone. And during the day, it was fine. It was not like it wasn't dangerous or anything. So it was that area of town. Although my dad was saying that when he was a kid, it was Scully Square was the combat zone, was the seedy part of town. Scully Square doesn't exist anymore. It's where Government Plaza is,
right? I'd cut that.
Yeah, City Hall is.
Right. So it used to be Scully Square.
They tore that all down to build the City Hall Plaza, Government Plaza. And then it all moved over to, I forget the names of the streets, but it's an area, and it's all gone now. So yeah, combat zone, they called it.
Okay.
So that's what's been happening. Let's talk about food and drink. Yeah, we had some drink we want to talk about this time. But first, let's talk about measuring cups and spoons.
Okay.
We were talking about needing to get some new measuring cups and spoons. We have a couple sets of measuring cups, although we've only got one quarter cup. And you know, the quarter cup is a surprisingly often used measuring cup, I realize. Much more so than the third cup.
Maybe.
I feel like it is. I'm feeling I'm constantly looking for it, and I'm never looking for the third cup.
That's because you don't do as much baking as I do.
I guess.
I use the third cup quite a bit. But, yeah, it's kind of a pain when you're trying to find the one cup or it's dirty.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is we get two sets. Well, actually, I think we had three. I think we have three. But, like, the...
I think we had two full and one partial.
Right. And then even, like, one of the one-cup measuring cups, the handle had broken off, and it's time for another set. We want another quarter cup and that sort of, you know, sort of stuff. But they don't make the kind, or I couldn't find the kind that we have now, which I like.
We have metal ones as opposed to plastic.
I do not like plastic measuring cups. I just do not. And one of the things you have to be careful of is they can't be flimsy, because if they're too bendable, then you're going to get inaccurate measurements, which, you know, when you're measuring for baking, you should use weights anyway, but not everyone's caught up with that with their recipes. What I ended up doing was looking at Cook's Illustrated. I usually see what they recommend, what they've reviewed. And so they recommended the OXO measuring cups. But for measuring spoons, you don't like the oblong or rectangular ones.
It's kind of funny. We were talking this week about the things in your drawer that you have that you don't really like using.
Right.
And I realized
that everybody's got that one fork in their silverware drawer that they just don't like. And if they pick it up, they put it back and get a different one.
Yeah. So I find we have several sets of measuring spoons, and we have two sets that are oblong and two sets that are round. But both of them are missing pieces. But
well, the two sets of oblong ones is one is the standard measures and one is odd measures. Like there's a two tablespoon.
And maybe the one reason I hate it is because
you're always picking up the wrong one.
Because I have to stop and look. I can't just reach into the drawer and grab. I have to stop and look. Is this the right one or is this the weird measure one?
Maybe we should put like a dot of paint on the handle for the weird measure.
Like a tag or something on it. I don't know. Uh-huh. But I also just really, I think I prefer the look of the round ones, the feel of them. There's something more satisfying about round than oblong. I don't know.
So the reason the Cook's Illustrated gives for why they prefer the oblong or rectangular ones is because they fit in spice jars better.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to not have a set of the oblong ones in the... But if I can see the round ones and the oblong ones... I will go for round over oval every time.
I agree. In fact, I prefer them too. Now, the reason we need new measuring spoons is because the round-headed measuring spoons we have now are starting to come apart. The plastic handles come apart.
I grabbed the tablespoon to make salad dressing tonight, and I got a big black smudge from the rubber handle my thumb.
That says it's time. So I ended up getting the OXO one that goes with the measuring cups. And they have these magnets in the handles. So rather than like a ring that they all hang off of, which I really don't like, I usually end up taking them off the ring.
Yeah.
Because it just gets in the way. And I don't want all of the spoons. I don't want a spoon dangling in the baking soda or whatever, you know, that I'm not using and get dirtying it. So these are magnets in the handles that they magnet together. But then when you want just one of them, you pull it off the magnets. Although, when it's in the middle, you end up having to pull them all apart. I don't know. We'll see how it works.
I'm dubious about.
I'm dubious too.
Magnetized. I don't know.
But it seems to be a thing because there are a lot of magnet handle.
Sounds like a gimmick. Yes. A fad.
Well, it's a. How do we sell more measuring spoons? We need a new feature.
I don't want my things to have features. I just want things that work.
Yes. Make the same thing for the next 100 years. The same way. Measuring spoons don't need to change. They are perfect as they are. Make them accurate. Like, that's a bit, again, accurate. Make sure it's one tablespoon and make them, you know, feel good in the hand, and then just don't change it. Yeah. Of course, nobody would buy them again anymore. So that was the thing tonight. So for things we've actually cooked, I made steak nigihama, which is the grilled, rolled up flank steak. Skirt steak? Skirt steak. I forget what it is. I think it's flank steak. But it might be skirt steak. Anyway, it's rolled up with scallions inside and cooked on the grill and, you know, very thinly cut and then glazed with a soy-based glaze. And it's really good. We've had it several times. But Teresa has some food allergies, and one of her allergies is soy sauce, anything soy. So we couldn't feed her that. So we had to think of something else to do. And so what we came up with was a lime juice, white wine, sugar, and salt combination, the glaze. Excuse me, pollen is all over the place in the air, so it's giving me hassles with my throat. But I think it worked out pretty good. Did you get a chance to taste it at all?
I did not try it.
It wasn't the same. You know, I prefer the soy sauce, mirin, rice, the mirin, and, well, it's supposed to be sake. I use sherry instead because we don't have any sake glaze. That actually I prefer. But this wasn't bad. If I couldn't have the soy sauce one, I kind of liked it. It was a different flavor, you know, totally different. But lime juice, white wine, sugar, and salt, it was good. So that was something good. We also wanted to talk about some drinks. We stopped at the Packy yesterday on the way home from the farmer's market.
Packy.
In Massachusetts, we have package stores is where we buy our alcohol from, mostly.
Package, like, because we can't, like, say that we're buying alcohol. I'm going to go pick up a package of, well,
alcohol.
Yeah.
But we call it the Packy. So we stopped there, and I got some beer and tequila. We didn't have any tequila. Actually, it turns out we did have tequila, but it's a Reposado, so, you know, the golden tequila. But I picked up some Terramana tequila, which is the new brand from, get this, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. He has his own tequila. And
Who'd have thunk?
Now, it sounds like, oh, this is like Guy Fieri tequila. It's a gimmick. It's probably, you know, rot gut that they throw a label on and people will buy because it says The Rock on it. Doesn't actually say The Rock on it at all. And it's actually really good. And it's highly rated, reviewed. It's like the number one new spirit brand in the world. Something, something, something. And so I picked some up and I made a margarita with it, a variation of margarita because I didn't have any Cointreau, but it's a very simple tequila, lime juice, and some simple syrup. It was good. It was a little too good, actually. I got a little tipsy with it, but refreshing, nice. It was really good. So, but I also got some beer. Young's Double Chocolate Stout, which you tried.
It was yummy.
Tell me about it.
It had a really good, very chocolatey flavor with almost a sort of a coffee note. It was good. I made fish cakes for lunch while y'all were out canoeing. We had some leftover fish, like haddock or something. I don't know, some white fish. So I made fish cakes and
gluten-free fish cakes so Teresa could have some.
Yep, I just crushed up some
leftover
some gluten-free crackers and some Chex and then sort of mixed it up with some egg and Worcestershire sauce and mayonnaise and a little bit of scallions and celery.
Mm-hmm.
Just very simple.
Yep. And fry it in a pan.
Yeah. And the fish had been cooked with a shawarma seasoning blend.
Mm.
And so it had a really nice kind of flavor to them. They were good. And so I decided I needed a beer to go with my fish cakes. I served them over a salad. So they were very like a kale, arugula, spinach salad.
Right.
So it felt like a sort of blend between
a light summery meal and a pub house.
Yeah. I felt like I was at a, you know, fancy pub.
Cool.
It was the kind of meal you would get at, like, you know, nice pub sitting up. Just needed the, like, water to look out
right
or something. But
yeah, The big thing these days is these IPAs. Everybody loves IPAs.
I hate IPAs.
We are in agreement on this. And don't try to tell me, oh, but you haven't tried this IPA. You'll like this IPA. No, no. I've tried them all. I've tried the ones where people have said, oh, no, this isn't like other IPAs. This one you'll like. No, no, I don't like that one either. So, but you and I are in agreement. And our pretty much our favorite style, we share the idea, is porters and stouts.
Right. I will drink a lager occasionally, especially in the summer when it's hot.
Oh, yeah.
But I really like stouts. I was not a beer drinker in college until I tried Guinness. And then I was like, okay, this I can actually drink.
Right.
So I've always been much more on the, like, give me a pint of Guinness end of. There are some stouts I have found that I don't really like, but in general, I'm usually if I order a stout, I'm usually happy with it.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it's a style, and some will be on the edges here and there, you know, on the fringes. But in general, the style you like, and that's the same here. I'm trying to think. Like the first, I think I probably had Guinness before I had the Sam Adams Stout, Cream Stout. Mm-hmm. But I was big on cream stout back in the early 90s when I was in Steubenville. So, I've always loved stouts and porters. And then the chocolate and coffee stouts have always been good.
You know, I was very skeptical about the whole chocolate stout, coffee stout sort of thing. Like, I don't really want my beer to taste like coffee, I thought. And then I tried them and I realized... Actually, I kind of do.
It doesn't, like, it's not like you're drinking a coffee. It's not, you know, it's, there are notes of it.
Right. It's more like the way, like, a wine might kind of have a peach note to it. It doesn't really taste like peaches. It just kind of has this sort of a hint of peach.
Right.
This is more like a hint of chocolate, but it mostly tastes like beer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, even in the summer, I like a stout or a porter, although I do sometimes like a lemon shandy in the summer. I do like a shandy as a refreshing beer.
Yeah, so, shandies are okay.
Yeah. I don't like grapefruit, which is fine because I can't have grapefruit anyway because of my medication I take. So I'm not missing anything. So cool. All right. So that's what we've been eating and drinking. So let's talk about what we've been reading and watching. I'll go first. I watched this week the 2018 movie Venom, which is a...
Venom?
Anti-superhero movie. So Venom is a character from Marvel Comics, and he's in the Spider-Man realm. And Tom Hardy was in it, the British actor who doing an American voice.
I don't know who that is.
I think he's British. Pretty sure he's British. All the actors these days in American movies are all British, especially when they're doing American accents. It's funny. Americans don't do British accents in British movies. It's funny. So,
and because the British would laugh at Americans trying to do British accents.
Right. Exactly. We do laugh at Benedict Cumberbatch doing an American accent, but that's a bit different. Anyway, I said it. So Venom it's the character. So how do I put it? There's an alien comes from space. It's a sort of parasite symbiote sort of thing. It bonds with a character, with a person, and can give them super strength. And it can also manifest like as a suit around them, almost as a character. And it's man eating. So like it lives on eating things. And so it's sort of an anti-hero. My guess is it takes on the characteristics of the host somewhat. So if the host is a good person, it will somewhat mitigate its violent tendencies and won't necessarily kill indiscriminately like it will if it bonds with a bad person, shall we say?
Okay.
And so there's this whole thing about there's this Elon Musk character. I mean, because that's what we do now. We have characters in movies who are Elon Musk analogs. And he's running this foundation that is both sending a spacecraft into space, but also trying to cure all these diseases on the world. And the one of his spacecraft discovered this alien life form and brought it back. And he's hoping that this symbiote can cure some diseases, but the way he's going about it is he's like throwing people at it and it's killing them because not everyone is a compatible host. And there's also some subplot about the Earth is some climate change thing about the Earth that we're destroying the Earth and we need to be able to go and live on another planet, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of silly. So for the first 30 minutes, there's not much going on. And it's the flaw with a lot of these origin sort of movies is they spend a way, like these origin superhero movies, they spend a way too much time on the backstory, on the not superhero part, like getting to know the character. Like, we're in the seat because we want to see superhero stuff. Show me superhero stuff. Get to the superhero part. Even if it's not like, it doesn't have to be like an action sequence, like a fight scene, but just like the person dealing with the superhero thing. Like,
right.
Don't just take too long. And they kind of took too long with that. I'm also not a huge fan of the anti-hero superhero stuff. Like,
okay.
Heroes who are bad. You know, I mean, there was a bit of like, oh, you know, he ate that guy. He bit that guy's head off because he was stealing from this nice lady who runs this store. That shouldn't really be a death sentence, you know? It's just, and they kind of like wave it off. And I just feel like it's just a movie, but I feel like it's a little too cavalier about killing off people.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like it when Doctor Who does that either.
Yes, yes.
He just sort of like, oh, we needed, you know, some to make the bad guys look bad, so we're going to have them kill half a dozen people in the course of an episode. And nobody really, like, acts like they just lost half a dozen friends and coworkers.
Right.
It's just kind of like, oh, well, yeah, right. they're gone.
When Missy kills Osgood, and it's just like, oh, that's too bad. Now, moving on to the next scene, and it's like, no, like, these are real people. Not real. They aren't real people, but they should be real people.
Be real people to the people in the show.
Right. They have families and friends, and they leave a hole in the world when they're gone. I mean, that's, I don't know, maybe because I'm old, but I get like, it treats life too, a lot of movies these days and TV shows, they treat, and probably always, treat life too cavalierly.
I think the term we're looking for is moral realism.
Yeah, yes. There needs to be more moral realism in these movies.
Like, the stakes need to feel real.
Well, this was the complaint with Man of Steel, the first, the Nolan, DC, Chris Nolan superhero movie with Henry Cavill, the Superman. Like, they destroy this, Metropolis. Like, they basically wipe out the city in this battle. And it's like, oh, wow, that's bad. And it's like, you have these battles and you're destroying the city. This is mass, deaths. This is on a epic scale. Tens of thousands of people will have died in this. But they kind of like, well, we need the stakes to be big. We need it to be a big scene. You know, we need it to feel big. But it's like, yeah, it's too much.
If the stakes are going to be big, then the consequences need to be likewise big. Otherwise, the stakes aren't really big. What you've done is created spectacle, but right. Without, I mean, what you've created is bread and circuses, really.
Right, right.
Which, yeah.
Turning, like, mass death into entertainment. And, yeah. That was my complaint a few weeks ago with the Godzilla versus Kong. You know, it was like, oh, you know, he just threw Kong through that building. Oh, wow. That was quite a battle. How many people were in that building? You got the guy who, you know, his daughter is waiting for him at home to come home from work, you know, that sort of stuff. It's like, ah. Anyway, again, I think maybe I'm asking too much of movies. Maybe because I'm older now, and when I was younger, I wouldn't have even thought of this sort of thing. It would just be entertained, but I don't know. Venom was okay. It wasn't a terrible movie, but it was just okay. It was, meh. All right. You didn't watch anything new this week, you said?
I watched an episode of Endeavor, but yeah.
We talked about Endeavor before.
Yeah.
And we watched the season finale of Rookie.
We did.
Which was good and very tense.
It was very tense.
Yep.
And it still has a lot. Like, there's still plot.
Unresolved. That's unresolved. Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But we won't spoil it. So, but you've been reading.
I've been reading. So I finished the book I was reading last week, Sea of Poppies, and I started immediately on the second book in the trilogy because it left our protagonists on a ship in the middle of a typhoon in the Bay of Bengal. So, I really needed to know what happened to them. So on to book two, which is called River of Smoke. There's, you can see the opium theme going on. Sea of Poppies, River of Smoke.
What's the next one? Do you know?
I don't remember.
Okay.
So the second one, we have the people, we jump forward in time a little bit. And we've got more, new characters being added. And
do you get resolution on the typhoon?
We did. We found out who survived the typhoon, which was pretty much everyone.
Okay.
So, thank goodness.
Spoilers. Just kidding.
I mean, actually, you kind of knew because, like, the thread, like I talked about through the first book, was kind of flashing forward occasionally to this character is going to portray this.
So she hasn't met all those people yet.
Well, or she's met them, but we have not yet. Or she's sort of met them, but doesn't know them enough to like want to portray them in her shrine. So we know that these characters are going to continue to have relationships in some way.
Okay.
But there was a lot of really good tension. I mean, the tension was tight all the way through the first book. There was no places where it dragged.
Good.
And the second book is really starting off strong with a lot more tension and a lot more characters. And it's really gripping.
Cool. Awesome. River Smoke by Amitav Ghosh. Good. I mean, it's an unexpected series, so I'm glad you're enjoying that. I'm still working my way through the second Thrawn book, like we talked about, that you talked about before. And you're right. It is very much a middle book of this
trilogy. It's the middle book of the trilogy.
It just sort of is moving the plot ahead, but not too much.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't hate it. I didn't. I thought there was a lot of really interesting stuff.
And a lot of interesting character development.
Right. But some of my favorite characters didn't get a lot of screen time.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
And it's, I kind of wish, how do I put it? I wish it was more of a Star Wars novel. Like, I get we're doing a whole set of books that take place in the Chiss Ascendancy and finding out the origins of Thrawn. But at this point, it could almost be any science fiction series. Like, there's nothing. There's references to. He's already, in one of the previous books, encountered Anakin Skywalker and that sort of stuff. But also.
But this is all the backstory. I mean, in the first trilogy, we saw Thrawn in the Empire and how he got there. This is all the before. Why he came to the Empire in the first place.
Yes.
How he got there.
I'm still waiting. Like, Thrawn is still not a bad guy, And I'm like, by the time of Star Wars Rebels, he's clearly a bad guy.
No, see, but I think that the original first trilogy of Thrawn books actually is that same time period. And I think that they do it. The book does a really good job of showing that he's not a bad guy. That's what I liked about him. He makes bad decisions. Yes, he allies with the emperor. He joins the Empire. He does the emperor's bidding, and therefore innocent people die and he makes bad choices. But on the other hand, he has an ethical code and he's obviously got a higher purpose that he's trying to accomplish. And he doesn't necessarily see the rebels as good guys. I mean, it's from a certain point of view. They're rebels. They're rebelling.
They're terrorists. And yes.
And I liked the ambiguity and the tension. I liked the idea that from a certain point of view, the rebels aren't the good guys.
Right. And they've played that a lot more in Star Wars in recent years, like in Rogue One. You get Cassian Andor is he says right up that I've made morally compromising decisions.
Right.
And we're going to see that in the Andor series.
Right. And then Saw Gerrera, who is clearly not a good guy. And so I think that what they're doing with Thrawn is showing that similarly, not all Imperials are evil. They're not all Palpatine. I mean, Palpatine right. is pulling the strings. But I think that's one of the interesting things about the Star Wars universe is Palpatine is evil. He's pulling the strings, but he's manipulating a lot of people who are not themselves evil, but they become his pawns.
Right.
For complicated and, you know, ambiguous reasons. They end up doing things that further Palpatine's cause, but they themselves aren't necessarily bad.
In some ways, it's like Hitler and Erwin Rommel. Rommel, the Desert Fox, was not necessarily, as far as I know, and someone could correct me, but from as far as I remember, he was not, like, evil. He was a really good general, and he was right. fighting on the wrong side, obviously, but...
Right. There. Not everybody who fought for Germany in World War II was a Nazi.
Yes.
There were plenty of people who were themselves...
Just soldiers, or what?
Right. Not... I mean... Obviously, they were on the wrong side, but not themselves evil, and therefore, war is complicated.
Yes, it is.
The people on the right side often did terrible, horrible, awful, really bad things, and right. people on the wrong side were often really good people who just happened situations. To be on the wrong side.
Right.
So, Okay.
So
I'm rooting actually for Thrawn to turn out to be like on the other side of Rebels. I'm rooting for Thrawn to turn out to be actually a hero, not just a anti-hero.
My assumption is he's going to show up in the Ahsoka series, if not in the Mandalorian series. And my hope is, because I'm pretty sure Moff Gideon is working for Thrawn, and my hope is that when we do finally see him, he is working for good.
I really, really want that to be the case.
Yeah. We'll see. Maybe Ezra has some effect on him. I shouldn't spoil too much, but yeah.
I don't know. At this point, Rebels is kind of like,
if you haven't watched it, you need to watch it because you're going to get spoiled eventually with all those other Star Wars stuff you're going to end up seeing. All right. So let's move on to talk about today. It's Pentecost.
It is.
Yes. So we had Father Williams again at Mass. All right. Very hot church.
our parish is not air conditioned.
Our parish church is not air conditioned, and wearing a mask in a non-air conditioned. Oh, my gosh. I was having a tough time. But he talked about, I thought it was very interesting, his homily. He said, so we've celebrated the Easter season, you know, and we spend that whole time thinking about the resurrection for 40 days now. And so Pentecost comes. And the whole thing turns to, now what are you going to do about it? I thought that was an interesting approach.
Right.
The Pentecost asks the question, all right, given all that you've experienced the past 40 days, what are you, and, you know, meaning me, you, and everyone else in the pew, what are you going to do about what you know?
What I really liked about his homily was that he really focused on Pentecost as something that happens now. It's not about a past event. It's not about what the Holy Spirit did for those guys back then. It's really about the Holy Spirit coming now to us here where we are. I mean, yes, the Holy Spirit came to Mary and Peter and the apostles and gave them a mission, but the Holy Spirit comes to us no less than he came to them.
Right.
Right here where we are. And that, you know, for us, it might not be quite as dramatic. We don't get the rushing wind and the tongues of fire over our heads, but that doesn't mean the Holy Spirit doesn't come to us.
Yes.
So then our task is to discern him, to be open to him, to let him fill us, because while he is coming, he can only come if we are empty, open, receiving him.
You know, I saw someone on Twitter saying, we often hear that Pentecost referred to as the birthday of the church, right? It's the day that the church was born, the apostles truly became bishops, Peter became pope, you know, that sort of thing. And they began the evangelization. But I heard someone else say, yeah, but Pentecost is also, in a way, analogous to Christmas. As Christ became, you know, entered into the world, on Christmas, the Holy Spirit enters into the world on Pentecost in a new way. I mean, Jesus pre-exists, obviously. Right. Christ pre-exists Christmas Day.
But and the Holy Spirit pre-exists Pentecost.
But they come into the world in a new way on those days.
Right. That's an interesting point.
Yeah. When you think about it. And so Pentecost is a big feast. It should be a big feast.
Right. Father did say that. Like he said, the only reason Pentecost doesn't feel like such a major feast to us is because the greeting card companies haven't figured out how to
sell cards.
Sell you on Pentecost. Like right. Christmas cards, Christmas is a whole big consumerist thing.
Right.
And Easter is not quite as big as Christmas, but it's getting close.
Actually, I think it's less the greeting card companies and it's more they haven't figured out a way to have us have a big family meal. Right? Christmas, big. It's a family holiday where all the family gathers together and has a big meal and exchanges presents. Easter is a big family holiday where all the family gathers to have a big Easter meal. There isn't like a Pentecost meal.
Which is interesting because like there are actual literary antecedents for Pentecost being a big feast day. In the King Arthur stories, Pentecost, like there's a big deal made out of Arthur having a big feast on Pentecost. And that's actually when like in some of the stories, like big things happen at the court because the court is all gathered for Pentecost.
Interesting. Well, there used to be that feast days were bigger deals. Like you'd have Michaelmas and you'd have St. Joseph's Day and you'd have all of these feast days where feasting actually happened.
So I guess we could actually have done more feasting too.
I suppose maybe we need to look at some of these. Like we already celebrate baptism days in our family.
Right.
You know, we have a special treat, a dessert to celebrate it. We've kind of gotten away from renewing our baptismal vows. I'd kind of like to get back to it.
Yeah, it's just the end of the day. I need somebody else to do some of the work instead of it all being me.
Yes. Well, we have older children now, including one or two who would probably be interested in helping with that. So we'll do that.
Somebody else needs to dig out the candle and light it.
So then we could, and then other feast days, like, you know, and sometimes we celebrate our patron saints, right?
Right.
You know, for Ignatius and Dominic and St. Melania and and St. Sophia. I mean, today is actually kind of a Sophia feast day, the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, there's some of these saints who their feast days are a little bit harder to pin down. Like, there is a St. Sophia, and I've found, like, several different candidates for the day.
Right. And then, you know, Isabella, there's Blessed Isabella of France, but there's also St. Elizabeth, the various kinds of Hungary and various other places. So, yeah. So, but we do celebrate those feasts. But we could, like, make a bigger deal and celebrate St. Joseph's Day and, like, the bigger feasts and solemnities of the calendar. We could do that. Make a deal out of it. I like the idea of living the liturgical calendar. I think making it real, making it a part of family life.
But here's the thing.
It's work, I know.
A big feast day is a lot of cooking, and I get tired. Like, I don't know how many big meals I have in me.
That's true. So maybe we need to pick them, you know. Easter, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Pentecost. Spread them out so they're not all close together, too.
Pentecost actually still feels kind of close to Easter.
Well, it's 40 days. It's
50 days.
50 days. Yeah, 50 days. So it's almost 2 months. Not quite. Yeah, I guess it is pretty close.
It is.
Well, I mean, Thanksgiving is a month from Christmas.
Yeah, that's kind of too close to.
But you don't have any choice in that.
No.
Okay. Well, we'll figure it out. We'll figure some other way of celebrating. I mean, even if it isn't a big meal, I don't know. I like the idea of trying to make these feasts more important. As they become less important, frankly, in the calendar, we do less to celebrate them in our churches. Maybe the church needs to have, you know, it'd be kind of nice if we had a parish
Pentecost picnic?
Pentecost picnic or something along those lines. I know Father's still pushing to do the outdoor mass for the summer, but I'm not thrilled with sitting out in the heat in the summer in the sun. Like, it's bad enough to sit in the church in the heat. Sitting in the sun in the heat, I'm not sure I'm up for that. But we'll see. Anyway, I think we should wrap things up there.
Okay.
Let's first take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Abby P., Jeffrey P., Lisa S., Joe S., and Jack B. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. If you have any feedback for us, we'd love to hear from you on anything we've talked about. You can do so by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And all the links that we discussed in our, will be in our show notes on sqpn.com. Please, if you get a chance to, and even if you don't have a chance, please, it really helps us if you make a little sacrifice of time, to go to Apple Podcasts and write a review. We really would appreciate getting your review that helps us grow the show and reach more listeners. And share the podcast with your friends. That is another great way to help us grow the show in the community of listeners. So until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.